Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Telegraph. The Telegraph. Podcasts.
Hi there, podcast fans. I'm Mina Rizuki. Welcome to the Telegraph Audio Football Club. On the podcast today, Liverpool find a way past an impressive Chelsea to maintain their 100% start to the season. Man City deal out a walloping against Watford, and Spurs and Manchester United falter. Anyone surprised? Elsewhere, Arsenal come from behind twice to squeeze past Aston Villa, and there's a Champions League review and a stuttering Barcelona. Okay, so we're in the studio. There's no Tom Kibbs, but we do have a wonderful panel for you. Let's start off with the tactical master that is JJ Bull. Hello, JJ.
Hello.
How you doing?
I think I have whiplash from playing football yesterday. I get absolutely battered in about the first 10 minutes when I took a guy on the outside and then looked for the foul and I got taken out. So.
Oh, so no Mel Gibson in Gladiator then?
I don't know if he was
Braveheart.
In Gladiator.
I forgot the name of the film, so that's just terrible. How are you, Sam? Sam Dean with us.
I'm very well. I'm good. I'm pleased to be back, as ever.
And of course, the legendary Matt Law.
Hi.
Aston Villa van. How have you been? Have you missed us?
No, not at all.
Oh, well, that's lovely.
Sorry.
He has returned legendary, so that's...
Yeah, I think we need to take that name off now. Let's go straight into it, because there have been some fantastic games over the weekend. Nothing more exciting, perhaps, than Chelsea-Liverpool. Liverpool maintained their 100% start. This is despite many of us wondering whether or not they were going to be, you know, a little bit tired over the summer. Me. So, who will be the first side to take points off them?
Oh, probably Man City. Chelsea should have done yesterday, for sure. I mean, they missed two very good chances, Tammy Abraham and Mason Mount. That's not to say Liverpool weren't good, but Chelsea will feel that certainly they should have got a point. Second half, I was actually surprised at Liverpool. They didn't really... They started it very fast and Kepa made two good saves, but then after the first 5 minutes of the second half, I thought it was pretty much all Chelsea. Mm. And a sort of a different Chelsea, who may be a bit less naive and a bit more clinical, would have certainly got a point, if not 3 points, off them. I thought Liverpool got away with it a little bit on Sunday.
Have you felt that way before, over the so far, the start of the season, that Liverpool can get away with it sometimes?
If I'm honest, I haven't watched them close enough. I think that was the first time I've seen them live this season. So, but I was surprised, because when they went 2-0 up, I feared for Chelsea. I thought they were going to get spanked.
Yeah.
And I thought Liverpool would really sort of keep their foot on the throat, as it were, and go for them. And they actually didn't. I thought they got a little bit sloppy. I agree with Jose Mourinho that Salah went missing a little bit, I thought, up top. And I thought there was a real chance there for Chelsea. But it's a big win for Liverpool. Their record away at the top six hasn't been great. After what City did to Watford... after six games, we're already kind of looking for responses from teams, which seems a bit ridiculous, but that's the nature of the fact that it's so clearly just a two-horse race so early. And they needed to respond, and they did, so it's a big win.
You know what? Liverpool are just really good at the fundamentals, and they're really good at taking advantage of so many situations. Brilliant at set pieces, 33 goals since the beginning of the last season. Sam, what is it that they're doing differently?
Well, I think they're doing the same things they always do, but they're doing them very well still. And they do them so well that other teams don't know how to fix the problem. I was thinking about the set pieces thing, and I haven't got any analysis or statistical evidence to back this up. But if you think about the way they play and how high they push up the pitch, like, a lot of the game when Liverpool play is in the opposition half. And they also have wingers such as Salah and Mane, obviously, who win a lot of free kicks because they're technical and they dribble at players. And then when you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold whipping in deliveries like that and people like Matip and Van Dijk attacking them, you're always going to be a threat. So they've got that sort of dual threat of, which I don't think City have as much, which is Liverpool can sort of threaten from set pieces as well as in open play, whereas City a bit more, not one-dimensional, that seems ridiculous to say, but Liverpool can go to somewhere like Burnley and put crosses in and challenge for goals, whereas City have to play their own way. And maybe that sort of thing will give them an edge, a tiny, tiny edge perhaps going forward.
JJ, we felt like Napoli sort of gave us a little bit of a blueprint on how to play against Liverpool, perhaps how to stop them attacking as effectively as they do in the Premier League. And yet it just seems like not many people perhaps know what to do when they face them in the Premier League.
Well, the problem is you're playing one of the best teams in Europe when you come up against them. If you try and sit deep, they end up finding a way through. If you try and push them high, then they go over the top of you and get in behind. They have everything really well balanced. I think the midfield is key looking at it. And we talked about the defence being solid and everything. But they have players who win the ball and they have players who provide the platform for everyone else to do what they need to do best. And you don't need... one of the things they played, I think against... Who was it? Where they played Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in the midfield from the start. It was against... Was it Newcastle?
I think it was. So, yeah, it was Newcastle.
Which makes sense because he can shoot from long range. So he's just got everyone who can play in this different bit. So they're playing against a team who sits deep. Oxlade-Chamberlain comes in, he can punt it from 20 yards and find like a decent shot on target. That gives them chances to, you know, come onto the goalkeeper who spills it and things like that. But the way they've put that squad together is, they look really good. I worry what happens in the January, February slump that Klopp's teams sometimes get. It's the only thing I think will beat them is that.
I was looking at their fixture list and it's actually, there isn't really like a really tough run for them until January, when they've got Tottenham away, Man U at home, and then Wolves away in the space of around 10 days, which actually doesn't sound that tough considering those teams' current form. But based on the last 18 months of football, that would be a really tricky 10 days for them. But before that, there's not actually a huge amount of like bad pile-ups, which sometimes you get when you know a lot of difficult games come along at once.
And so, if they lose your pal Firmino, then I think they fall apart, but they're totally different. He makes everything work.
Do you know what though? I watched it yesterday. I watched them quite closely. I think there is a problem between Salah and Mane.
Do you?
Yeah, I don't think it's.
Oh,
a
you think
off.
That's stage over now?
Yeah, I think there's a problem there.
Did you notice anything there in the Champions League game as well?
I didn't see it. I was watching Chelsea. Right.
So I saw a problem in the Champions League between those two, and I agree with Matt because you can tell that the Mane thing, him spilling over, is the build up of a long time of Salah stealing the stuff like we talked about in the pod before.
It's not a one off, is it?
But in against Napoli. There's a couple of times when Salah was in Mane's position to trying to take shots that Mane should have, and Mane, rather than going nuts at him, just sort of stands and like breathes out and looks at him.
There was that yesterday. There was a couple of occasions when Salah didn't pass to him when he should have passed to him as well. And now you're looking for it. That's the thing. I would never have noticed it before, but now you're looking for it. And he didn't pass to him in a couple of good positions, and you can tell Mane's just not happy about it. There's a problem there. It's not just a little one-off. It's not just all jokey-jokey, oh, everything's fine. I thought it was to start with, and I misread it. There's a problem with those two.
I think as well, because Salah wants to be, I don't know if he wants to be the star, but he wants to be involved in the game. So when he goes missing, he goes looking for it. But actually what he'd be better off doing is staying in his position to draw players away from others so that other people can have the fun, but then he's not getting involved with the play as much. Mm. It's quite common with folk who are good on the ball and like to attack. But exactly what you're saying. You can see it.
But Salah didn't. What's changed, do you think? Because I would say that Salah's game ever since he came to Liverpool has been quite, you know, lots of shots, lots of dribbles, trying to do his own thing. Do you think Mane's now got a different view of himself?
They shared the top goal scorer last season, didn't they? I think Mane's probably now like, okay, I'm your equal now.
Yeah. Why is he not getting the same credit? Yeah, why is he not hailed as the amazing player?
The first season, I thought that Mane adjusted a lot of what he did, and I thought he sacrificed a lot on a tactical level to also help Salah integrate himself as well within Liverpool. And maybe he just feels like, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to be the guy that sacrifices. I want to also be the star.
Yeah, you step up. It's like a promotion.
It might not end up being a problem. They might just go the whole season
being a bit sort of annoyed with each other. There's been plenty of strikers who've done that in the past.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't mean that everything falls apart.
No.
I'm not having it that there's not a problem between the two of them.
I also drive them on a bit if they've got that little bit of fraction going on and be like, ah, I'll show you, and that might help.
Yeah, it might actually help in the end. But actually, that's interesting because what about Chelsea? Like, you know, we talked about the fact that they had chances. Tammy Abraham was in excellent form coming into this game, and it looked like it was really strange. He had that chance and he sort of squandered a beautiful chance. Is it that sometimes he's intimidated by certain opponents, or was it just a bad game and a one-off?
No, I think that was just a good save by Adrian. Like the one he missed when he's through on goal and he's shooting across the goalkeeper. Mm. You can either go near post, which I think Adrian's got covered, or you can't really get out the far post and he didn't lift it enough. It's just a miss hit.
Or you square it to Mason Mount for a tap-in.
Well, yeah.
I thought genuinely he provided quite a good threat. But I do think with Tammy Abraham, and I thought this all of last season, he is a striker who needs a lot of chances.
Mm.
If he's not someone I don't think you can rely on. He's not clinical enough that he'll always score his one chance in a game, and that's what he's got to add to his game. I mean, he's still young and still raw. And that might come, that he becomes more clinical.
I remember Andy Cole was like that for Man United, I thought. Another kind of poacher. And that could be, I mean, he gets the chances. Yeah.
And he will always score goals. But at the moment, the player he's at the moment, in big games, the fear will be that if he gets one big chance, he will miss it.
Yeah, it's easier when it's against a sort of newly promoted sides, because they will concede a lot more chances for him to really show what he can do. It's a little bit tougher against obviously better opposition. But just a final word on Chelsea. They are a very exciting team to watch. They obviously opened up Liverpool a lot from the back. They concede tons of goals and they score a lot of goals as well. I mean, where do you see them sort of ending up at the end of the season?
Well, I think they've got to look at Liverpool's first season with Klopp, when they took an eighth position and accepted it. And there was quite a lot of criticism around Klopp at the time about how he hadn't really improved Liverpool from Brendan Rodgers and things like that. I think I even said it. And Chelsea could easily finish eighth. Mm. I mean, I think they'll probably finish higher than that, because if Kante can stay fit, I think they'll have enough to start actually seeing off the smaller teams who they're not seeing off at the moment. But they could finish about eighth, and the test is whether they accept that.
So they've now conceded 13 goals in 6 Premier League games, and that's their most at this stage of any season since 1978, which is quite eye-opening, I think, showing how much this has changed. And also their next 3 games are Brighton, Southampton and Newcastle, which you look at those three and think, if you're not getting, well, probably you're not getting 9 points or at least 7 points from those 3 games, then you're not going to be competing for the top 4. And I just wonder how much the mood, Matt, you'll know better than me, but I wonder how much that mood might change.
I don't know. I mean, they got an amazing applause off the pitch yesterday. I think the match-going fans have bought into it.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch.
I think they've bought into it. I think they're willing to have a season of the results are going to be iffy, but if it's going to mean these kids get a go and it's going to be exciting, then we're going to stomach it.
Well, whatever problems Chelsea may have, they're not as dire as what Watford have. Manchester City obviously walloped them 8-0 and went 5-0 ahead and made Premier League history. Is this a reaction to the fact that they lost to Norwich? Is this just them being them and Watford being, I don't know, a very poor version of themselves?
It's not a good time to play City. I would say that after they've just lost that game, it's a really bad time to have to play them.
Yeah. So you do think it's a point to prove then?
I think that's got an element to it, yeah. Here's a prediction for you, though. I'm convinced that Watford are going to do at least 3 managers this season. Kike Sanchez Flores isn't surviving this. No chance.
I mean, how can anyone?
They've gone so early.
I mean, it's a hard thing to get over an 8-0. Like, well, if I'm sitting there and I'm your president, I'm thinking to myself, I'm wondering, like...
I mean, Javi Garcia's out of a job, so...
yeah, exactly. Just keep going between them until...
I mean, I think it definitely is the players wanting to prove to themselves, even that Norwich game is just a freak that happens now and again. They started this right on it, but Watford were awful. It's like they turned up... just like, oh, please don't hurt us. And you can see it kind of tentative, a little clever. I wonder how much of that is this is Guardiola getting Kevin De Bruyne to move out to the right wing all of the time, or whether it's just because he noticed he could go there. But all he was doing was going out, drawing players out and hitting these early balls across the defence, and it was they couldn't deal with it. Watford had no idea what to do. Their fullbacks were getting torn apart. It was really funny to watch it, not for Watford fans, obviously, but watching it at the time, you're just like, wow, this could be anything.
This is it. Didn't anybody else feel slightly cheated that it didn't end up 10?
Well, yeah, but then Aguero hit them post twice.
I mean, I just mean double figures. Yeah, I felt slightly cheated that they didn't end up getting double figures. I think they should have 1 point deducted.
I don't think they were even trying that much the second half either. I think it was that...
This is what it is. How much is
of
this?
Don't want to embarrass them, I think. It's the professionalism. They're just like, let's not kill
8-0
them.
Is definitely... 5-0 after 18 minutes is definitely embarrassing.
Exactly. 5-0 after 18 minutes, you've got to get double figures.
Well, I swear, they weren't even trying that hard.
You can't do that. You can't get double figures. That's so disrespectful.
Well, it should be a point deducted then.
The goals were so easy. Interesting thing as well. Silva got a hat trick, right? Playing a left forward, which is what Sterling normally does.
Yeah.
And it kind of shows you that Sterling is a good player. He's like one of the best attackers in Europe just now. But a lot of that is because of the way the team is built to give him these opportunities to score. he's getting tap-ins and things like that. Silva did exactly the same thing and was mad at you. Got a hat trick. I mean,
are you saying that if you played left wing for City, you'd get loads of goals?
And whiplash.
But how much of this is about Manchester City being fantastic, and they are always fantastic, or is this a lot to do with the fact that Watford were the most passively defensive team I've ever seen, like barely any of them even trying at some points, you know, sort of just standing around looking to see, oh, look, nice triangles being played right around us, you know. Is this Watford capitulating, or is this Manchester City showing
the
very
best? I wonder whether this is Watford's... I've actually praised Watford's thing about changing managers and not being scared to, but I wonder whether it's about to really hit them this season, because I wonder now whether the players just aren't connected to anything. Why do the players care? Why should any Watford player feel invested in Kike Sanchez Flores when they know it's just going to get turned around?
And because the Chelsea players were invested.
It's a different thing though, isn't it? Chelsea players are at a level where there's a professional pride and they're still going for trophies.
Yeah, they're playing for titles, aren't they?
I still wonder whether now those Watford players, I don't really see what they've got to get invested in. Why should they care if Flores becomes another manager who's sacked? With the start they've had and the problems that it looks like there is with a few attitudes there, I possibly feel everything's now going to come back to bite Watford a bit.
So you're blaming the squad and perhaps not Flores, you're not...
It's hard.
I mean, why did he change the centre-back the partnership?
You can forgive.
Why would you all of a sudden just change that? You know,
I think
it was a great performance.
Wasn't available or something, wasn't it?
It wasn't...
I don't actually know. You've got to blame the coach a bit because, you know, he set the team up. But I think, given he's only been in for his second game, I think the player's attitude has got to... If you're a professional team, however good Manchester City are, you shouldn't lose 8-0. You should be able to, at some point, set yourselves up where you just stop.
Because City scored in that first minute, this is the thing as well. This happens quite a lot. You just concede in spells of like 10, 20 minutes, and then eventually you get back into your grounding when you are. And that was the problem, is that they were already up 5-0 within that opening spell.
You can forgive a team for not getting close enough to De Bruyne after an hour of chasing City, and you're tired, and and it's getting to you, but it's 52 seconds and they let De Bruyne just pick his cross out. And, you know, of all the players to give that space, like, he's the best, like, cross of the ball we've had probably since Gerrard in the Premier League. Like, he's taken the mick with some of his deliveries this season. And, like, that's 1 minute in. That's got to be on the players. There's no way Flores said, oh, yeah, give De Bruyne a load of space to pick out his man.
Why not?
That's got to be the players sort of...
He's a genius.
Not being intense enough, not pushing enough.
Okay, I mean... There are several teams in the Premier League that have problems, United being another one. 2-0 loss to West Ham. Before we go into United's troubles, how good are West Ham? Do you think they are a side that can, rather than Everton perhaps, and like Leicester, push for that top six, please?
I would put them in that bracket along with Leicester. Yeah, you look at their team and it's got quite a nice balance to it now. They've got sort of flair players up front and they're quite rugged where they need to be. The issue is always going to be, as it has been for them since Pellegrini came in, is consistency. Now they'll just sort of play really well against a good team and then the next week just basically disappear. But I quite like the balance of the team, and yesterday you looked at their midfield compared to Man United's and
fantastic.
It's just a better midfield, just better players.
Even Mark Noble were getting that Man United.
Yeah, Noble was brilliant.
Mark Noble was brilliant.
He was phenomenal yesterday.
Like, you guys made fun of me when I said that he needed to
play. We did.
And and you got obviously Yarmolenko's... He's a very technically gifted player who's obviously had a really impressive career, and he's now fit, doing well. They had no Lanzini yesterday, who started the season really well. JJ, you wrote about Lanzini, didn't you? He's a top player. And obviously, Felipe Anderson is
I think, quality when he's on his game. I've seen him about 10 times, and half the time he's been terrible, and half the time he's been amazing. So when they're all up for it and on it, as they were yesterday, I think they're a match for pretty much anyone.
Right, so that's enough love for West Ham. Now let's start with the hate for United. Oh, I'm just lying. What's going on there? Because I look at this team and I don't think it's that bad.
The players aren't good enough.
Yeah. But it is that.
It is that. So, like, Solskjaer is relentlessly optimistic, and he has to be. Like, if you are a negative coach, you breed negativity in your players. So he doesn't do that. So he constantly talks them up.
But is it now coming across as slightly delusional?
I think there's a point now where he might start to realise he's going to look stupid, because if they keep letting him down, he keeps backing them up. It makes him look like he's a fool to pick them. But this is exactly what happened with Louis van Gaal, exactly what happened with Jose Mourinho as well. And eventually they both started throwing players under the various buses they've been trying to park. And the reason Mourinho had them, they were boring to watch Mourinho, they're terrible, but he made them really, he's a very pragmatic coach, but he made them very defensive because they didn't have players good enough to defend properly if they opened up.
Yep.
So if they go on the attack and a turnover possession, and the opposite team comes at them, they don't have centre-backs who can deal with it, and they just make individual errors as well. And you see, like, teams are actively targeting Victor Lindelof now with, like, high balls towards him because they know he can't read it properly. Harry Maguire can't fix everything. Wan-Bissaka is young and should be learning next to someone who can tell him where to go. Lindelof's next to him. He's learning. He's about 23, 24, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
He's still learning. Ashley Young should be nowhere near the squad at this point. He's old. He should be in the dressing room helping, trying to get a mentality going, but he's on the pitch. Like, one of his first involvements was to punt it out of play, a 70-yard pass. It's awful.
First 10 minutes yesterday, Maguire had accidentally kicked the ball out for his own corner. Wan-Bissaka had fallen over his own feet, and I think Lindelof had sort of skied a pass literally into, like, row F. And that's at West Ham, that's saying something.
And like Wan-Mata was good 7 years ago. So he's one of them. Yeah. Like, they rely on him as a creative player. Rashford does the hard things well, but the simple things kind of rarely or kind of badly. He doesn't make runs to the front post to attack the ball. He waits for it. He doesn't seem to be in the right place to get poacher's goals. He tends to just run onto something and create. I think he's a good player. Daniel James is still learning. Andres Pereira, he's going to be anonymous in La Liga in a couple of seasons. Yeah. It's the players who aren't there. I still think Solskjaer is a good coach, maybe not an elite, like, top level one, but he can maybe prove he can get there with the right players. But he needs another two transfer windows. The dressing room isn't there. The mentality isn't there to bring these young ones through. Of that starting 11, I think Matt has won the league. Matic has won the league. Young has won the league, and so has De Gea. And, like, you don't want any of them in your first team. Okay. Cut them to here.
Obviously, there's a lot of talk about Pogba all the time, and he's never been consistent enough for what he's supposed to be. But you can imagine, if you're West Ham, if you're Declan Rice, for example, when you look at that Man United team sheet yesterday and you see Matic, McTominay and Mata,
you must just look
at it and think, that's just like, I'm going to have an easy day here. I'm just going to bully them. Mm. Whereas when you see Pogba, you think, okay, this guy's bigger than me. He's stronger than me. He's faster than me. He's got more skill than me. It's going to be a tough one. And just like the lack of star quality on that team yesterday was just really quite striking. Because we've all grown up with United teams being, you know, attacking, thrilling, you know, top level players. And it's just so far away from that right now. And obviously there are injuries, and Pogba and Martial change the look of that team a bit. But
Pogba especially, I think he's their only like top elite level player. He's the only one. I know he makes mistakes and you can call him out for loads of stuff, but United now are where Liverpool were in the 90s, basically. Off the back of that great manager, a rugged Glaswegian came in and made them slightly worse. And now they have just... they don't have players good enough to take them to the level that they need to be at. They've wasted too many transfer windows not bringing in quality that they needed. The structure hasn't been there for too long. And what they need now is to look at what, like, Liverpool did post-Rodgers when they took Klopp in and accepted an eighth kind of place. And Solskjaer is the man who would get them to this eighth place. And they have to have faith that he's the one who would then get them above that. But, like, dropping down that low is lower than they were even last season.
I don't know why you'd have any faith in him, though.
There's nothing
that makes me think you should have faith in him. I don't know why you think he's a good coach.
Because I know it's Norwegian football, maybe not the best, but he took Molde from where they were relatively mid-table obscurity and made them very good. Mm. He won the league with them the first time, I think, in his first or second season, and then he won it again, and he won the cup. He also won the reserves of Man United. It doesn't really matter, but it's still a level that he shows he knows how to win a league. Then when he went back to Molde after the disaster at Cardiff, he again took them from, they'd fallen down again once he'd gone, and took them back up the challenge again. So he knows how to put a squad together in a different league to challenge, and he knows what it is to win. He's also got experience of winning as a player under a very good manager. I know it looks like he may not be a great coach, but he's not got a great team just now. He's got a team that are pretty much suited to being, I would say, top eight at the moment. And if he says the right things and he sees that he wants to play in a certain way, which is what the fans want, he's got a coaching team there that's quite young. Also, Mike Phelan is a good coach. And it was there when Ferguson was there. The other two coaches, main coaches they've got, are Michael Carrick, brand new to it, and Kieran McKenna, who is highly rated. But again, he's a young boy, so I think he's about my age, actually, I think. And a lot of these managers who win things will have older coaches. Like, look at Guardiola's team is a lot more experienced. You know, Arteta is probably the youngest he's got on that sort of bench. And even the coaching staff behind the scenes, everything's just not quite there. But with time, as long as they trust in that project that Solskjaer can be the guy that does it, they should be okay. But with Klopp, you had high-level proof he'd done it.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the thing.
Solskjaer's currently their only striker as well.
Also, if I look at this team, I actually don't think there's... The defence is not that bad. Even you can have a great defence, but if you don't have a system, it doesn't work. And I don't think the forwards are that bad. I look at that, and for me, it's the midfield. Like, if you ask me what's the difference between them and any team going forward, I would change all their midfielders. If I had, I don't know, a Rakitic, a Kante, I think that team could do so much better. So can they even attract those types of players that will make the difference for United going forward?
They should buy Ndidi from Leicester and John McGinn from Aston Villa.
And Madison from Leicester.
Yeah, that would make them a good team.
Again, none of these guys, though, have the experience of Champions League or anything of higher level.
Yeah, but they're just really good.
No, I know they're good, but I think that what they need sometimes is a nice blend of veteran experience and youth.
But those they've tried getting in these veteran players, like they've brought in Ibrahimovic.
Not dying veteran. I'm talking about sort of
Schweinsteiger. They brought in. They thought it'd be you bring in experience, right? What when are you going to get them? If they're at the peak level, what mental club would get rid of them? None. The money it would take in to get someone like Sergio Ramos peak level, you're not going to do it. You have to buy a player who's not got that peak experience, like Virgil van Dijk at Southampton, and bring them in and take them up.
Who would you buy, Mina? Who are you suggesting?
I don't know. I mean, I think Rakitic, they could have gone. I think he's a fantastic player.
Yeah, I mean, he's slightly older now. You get much years out of him.
Yeah, or you only need one or two. You need him to show the guys going forward what they need to do. It's just about their intelligence in midfield. And then if they start winning again, or at least reaching top four, then they can start attracting a little bit more talent. But with them not going for this, they keep falling down lower and lower, the pecking order. Mm. And even less players want to go there at the moment. I mean, it's crazy to think in a world where Paulo Dybala would rather be on a bench than go to United. I've never thought of that in my life would ever be serious. But enough of them a second. We
can
have
I make
to
a
move
quick
on.
Point about Wan-Bissaka?
Yeah, yes. Sure.
I know you have to move on, but I'm going to make a point anyway. Obviously, he has all these amazing tackle stats that everyone talks about. Like, oh, he's made the most tackles of anyone in Europe. He never gets dribbled past. But yesterday, there was a point where like West Ham were like going down the left wing, and it was literally like in the corner flag, going nowhere. Like three United players around Cresswell, I think. And Wan-Bissaka just came in and like, did this amazing slide tackle and gave West Ham a throw-in. I'm like, what? That wasn't good defending. And the people are like, yeah, he's got great tackle stats. But like... That's actually not good defending. It was more, if he just sort of stood him up, he couldn't have gone anywhere. They would have won the ball back.
That's the thing. If you play Sunday League, you can have the best game and not give the ball away even once, but no one thinks you've done well until you've taken someone out.
In Italy, we look at tackle stats as meaning that you were in the wrong position so that you had to commit a tackle.
Exactly.
Exactly. The old cliche. Was it Maldini?
Absolutely. Was it Maldini? Say?
One who said, oh, if you make a tackle,
you're obviously in the wrong position
said.
To begin with.
Yeah.
Spurs. Going to finish third. Like, what? This was such an interesting game. How much of that can be attributed to VAR, or was it just Spurs being Spurs?
That's a good question.
They've surrendered leads in three of their last four games.
I know, it's looking pretty bad for them.
Very Spursy.
They've not won away. Since.
Another midfield problem there. There doesn't seem to be much of a filter on a defensive level.
Well, they've got no width. That's their problem.
So before January last season, they had the best away form in the Premier League. Since January, they've only won once, which was against Fulham, which was in January. And what changed in January? They sold Moussa Dembélé. So I would suggest...
So that's the resolve.
My theory, is that the lack of control in midfield and lack of sort of... players to absorb pressure, because Harry Winks is very good on the ball, but he's struggling to do the defensive work. The lack of midfield sort of control is a big part of the problem.
And I think there's a mentality problem as well. You know, we talked a lot at sort of around the transfer window about all these players they've got who are coming to the end of their contract now, how many are as motivated as they used to be.
you know, you've got three guys who from January can start speaking to clubs overseas. You've got other guys like Dyer and Dele Alli who just aren't around it at the moment, and you wonder what their mentality is like. You've got new players coming in who need a bit of time. You've got other people just looking stale. It just, the away form just seems to sum up the mentality.
They might have hit a ceiling as well. Yeah. That Champions League final was that they didn't win that, and that's sort of the point now. And you think, we're not, if you're Harry Kane or Christian Eriksen, you think, I'm not going to win the league here ever. I want to do that. I'll go somewhere else to do that. I'm probably going to win the Champions League again. I won't get to this ridiculous height again. A cup run doesn't really matter. You want to be playing at the very highest level. And I think a lot of the players realise that that's where they are. And what they've got on, like the squad they have, like talk about a lack of midfield control. They have no wingers, no natural width. So they're relying on their fullbacks, but everyone knows it now. So they just keep them pinned back.
Absolutely.
And it's really easy to defend against them. If you look at their touch maps at like average positions, as a team, they're always right through the middle. Like there's almost all through the middle third. And all teams have to do is sit deep against them and the run out of ideas. They didn't play Eriksen again. Was there a reason they didn't play? Is it just tiredness?
Not that I know. No, it's just rotation.
And it just changes everything up. And Harry Kane, I'm still yet to figure out what's quite wrong with him, but he's not playing the same way he used to. He's not playing off the last man. He's not shooting as much as he used to. He's dropping, I think, because he's wound up by everyone else, not doing the stuff he thinks he should be and looking for the ball all of the time.
Is it because Ali's not alongside him?
Maybe, but then you've got Son off of him. So I think Son's done the running that he used to do, or he normally does, rather than Son being out wide. So when Son's wide, then Kane's fine through the middle. But because he's next to him in a two and he's got Lamella behind him, I don't know what Lamella does either. Like, he's quite a good footballer, but he doesn't seem to actually do anything.
I know the defence
is getting
about,
worse as well. You know, Alderweireld and Vertonghen.
Yeah, not foundations.
They're just sort of getting a percent lower. They're not getting any better. Sanchez is a bit rash when he comes in. Fullback's an issue. The Trippier thing looks like a mistake now. Mm. There's issues all over the place for Spurs.
What about James Maddison? He was fantastic. Probably the shining light of the weekend in terms of performances. Why do you think Southgate is reluctant to give him more minutes?
Is my big bugbear of the last international break. And I know this is very retrospective to go back to.
Yeah.
How could Southgate give Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain 13 minutes off the bench against whoever it was, however many goals we were up, and not have a look at James Maddison?
Is it because off the ball, James Maddison is not the player
I don't
that
care.
He
at the time, we're about 4-0 up.
Yeah, it's true.
It's not like it was from the start of a game. Just have a look at him. And if you have to change a formation to do it in a game, have a look at him. You've got to have a look at him.
Okay, so formation, we know.
Hasn't Southgate said before that because we play with a 4-3-3, we haven't got a number 10, so Maddison
I get that from the start, but in a game you can change formation. Exactly. And when you're winning a game easily, change formation, have a look at him.
You have to be versatile and adaptable.
Yeah. Especially when he's clearly that good.
Yeah.
He's playing this well. Like, what message does it send to someone who's doing this well, young?
And it's not just in the last few games. It's for like a year now.
It'd be a whole change in system, though. This is why I think he hasn't put him in just yet, but maybe will in the future, because they're playing that 4-3-3, which is very different to 4-2-3-1. And the reason is they want the three midfield three to be people who win the ball and keep it very sturdy. They don't want any unnecessary flair or things like that. It's meant to be quite a, I don't know what the word is, just rigid, you know, that kind of midfield that sits between the defence and the attack, so that way they can play more forwards in central positions like Kane, Sterling and Rashford all at the same time. So they get that. As soon as you put Maddison into that, straight away, you've only got two midfielders covering that same amount of space, and he'll go forward and drift into spaces behind it. But he'll actually end up operating in the same spaces as players like Kane when they drop into the hole. And it makes that whole thing not work, and you have to rely on your fullbacks to get forward to give you width. And then all of a sudden, you've got all sorts of other problems. But if you change to 4-2-3-1, then you have to have a wide left player as a, you know, an inside forward probably, or a winger. But I don't know if England still don't have one of them yet, do they?
Well, maybe not, this deserves another pod.
Sterling?
Deserves another pod.
Probably ahead of the next England get-together.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, but we want to talk about it a little bit when we talk about, you know, mentalities, fragile mentalities. Arsenal looked like they might have overcome it this weekend when they came back from, you know, Aston Villa's goals and actually won that match. Matt, I'm sure that was
very disappointing. I'm not talking about it. I'm not talking about it. I can't talk about it.
Sam, you talk about it.
On the positive side for Arsenal, when Unai Emery came in, what he was told by people both within and outside the club was that, what we all knew was that Arsenal were feeble, a bit weak, a bit fragile. His first or primary objective last season, and well, since he took over, he says, has been to sort of make them tough again, make them mentally tough, make them fight, make them competitive, reinstall that spirit that was lost in the final years of Arsene Wenger. If we look at it from that point of view, which is if that's his top objective, this was a really big step forward for them because it showed a lot of that spirit. But then you go beneath that and all the same problems that we've been having this season remain, and all the actual technical on-pitch problems are there and everyone can see them, which is that they are so wide open. It's, you know, it's hard to believe how open they are. I mean, I was in Frankfurt with them last week and like that game could honestly have finished about 5-5. And the same applied for the Watford game the week before. And yesterday, it looked like, I mean, in the first half, Villa were just like, Grealish and McGinn just had literally the whole pitch to run around in. And it's clearly an issue with Xhaka playing as a holding midfielder, as it has been for a while. And I don't think, however great Guendouzi is, and he was probably the key man in the comeback yesterday, and he was the key man against Spurs 2 weeks ago as well. However good he is, he's not disciplined. He's sort of quite a free-spirited.
Out of position all the time.
He's running around like mental, which is great when you're chasing a game and he's winning all these tackles and putting all these crosses in and stuff. But when you're trying to control a match, we're talking about controlling Spurs, when you're trying to sort of dominate a game the way that Arsenal probably should be doing against Aston Villa, he's clearly not helping either. So there's a lot of issues for Emery to solve there. And it seems that signing Nicolas Pepe has made them more open because they've got more attackers on the pitch, whereas last year he basically just played Lacazette and Aubameyang, and the rest just did the work behind them. So there's a lot of issues with balance and all that going forward. But as we say, if your main objective is to toughen you up, then this is a massive step forward.
Is there a question of balance when it comes to Wolves? They're still without a win. Last team that I'd like to talk to you about. Obviously, Palace got the goal, should have probably had all 3 points, but then Wolves managed to rescue a point. We know that Palace has a few issues in scoring goals from Schlupp and Benteke taking too many touches or whatever it may be. But what about Wolves? What's going on there? They were so brilliant last season and they're still without a win.
I think it's a case that, as we predicted last season and have mentioned a couple of times this season, that teams know what to expect from them and they don't have the same, the same kind of momentum that they did last season to carry them through a lot of these games. They're having to manage Europa League and switching back and forth. The defence isn't exactly the same as it was last season either. But Crystal Palace should have won this. They had loads of chances to win it. Hodgson was furious at the end.
Can't blame him.
Benteke won.
Stop taking so many. It was so annoying to watch.
He practices every day in training. How is he still hitting it straight at the goalkeeper?
That's a confidence thing, isn't it? When you're just so desperate to hit the target, you end up hitting the keeper all the time.
And the only way to get over it is to score.
It's
impossible to fix. Yeah.
I was alarmed by. I mean, I wasn't on the pod last week. I'd been to the Wolves Chelsea games. I was really alarmed watching Wolves. I mean, their defence had gone. Looks like it's slightly gone to pieces. I wonder as well whether players like Neves and Moutinho, now they've sort of achieved what they have with Wolves, whether there's a bit of sort of Moutinho's contract is coming to an end. Neves has been linked with a lot of big clubs. What are they really going to achieve with Wolves long term? I wonder whether a little bit of focus has gone. It'll be interesting the fact they've got this point, which will have felt like a victory, whether this kickstarts the season now.
Let's see about that. We have our Champions League wrap. Liverpool have obviously been unbelievable in the Premier League. We know it's been sort of coming up to a week since they played this game, but Napoli did beat them 2-0, which was surprising because when the changes happened, we thought Napoli actually lost a beat, but ended up winning 2-0. What is it with Liverpool and their away games in Europe?
What's it with them? I mean, it's just Napoli, isn't it? They lost their last season as well.
So you think it's... No, but they also lost 6 of their last 8 away games in Europe.
Well, Anfield's just this mysterious beast that carries them through a lot of things.
And they did win the Champions League.
Yeah, like...
European form's okay.
It's okay, just okay. Is there anything to worry about, basically?
I don't think so. I mean, teams are always stronger at home. Like, statistically, there's a slight advantage to the home team. But in Europe, I think... I'd love to know what the actual statistic is. But there's no difference that there are in the way they approach games. It's just that the home teams... I mean, the teams are playing against the Premier League are totally different to the ones in Champions League. So it is a different way you've got to play. You can't be quite so relentless. But you look at... Like, Klopp has taken Dortmund to Champions League finals. He's taken Liverpool to 2 now.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. And It's just like really good players who might achieve something in a very good team against Liverpool sometimes at home. I don't think there's anything to worry about. It's just that's how football goes. You lose games sometimes. Doesn't mean you've done something wrong when you lose.
Absolutely. Well, sometimes with Pep and City, I do think that. But anyway, Chelsea, a little bit poor versus Valencia. Valencia have their own problems, obviously. Sacked Marcelino. Huge outrage going on with the fans at the club. They can't believe the direction they're going in. And yet they won against Chelsea.
Yeah, they made Chelsea look what they are as well, a little bit naive. You know, you could kind of see what was coming. You could kind of see that they were going to nick a goal and that it would be enough. I think Chelsea are going to struggle. I thought it before, and I just think even more they're going to actually struggle to get out of that group.
Do you think Spurs are going to struggle, considering that they threw away their all 3 points?
I tell you what, if Spurs lose at home to Bayern Munich, all of a sudden that becomes tricky.
But it was touch and go last season as well.
It was. Well, it wasn't just touch and go. They're out of it last season. I mean, it's a miracle they got through the group in the end last season. And it will become tricky for them if they lose at home to Bayern Munich, because it means probably they wouldn't be able to have another slip. But I really think, you know, you've got to think Ajax are the strongest side in their group. They're going to have to go. Chelsea are probably going to have to win in an Ajax or a Valencia to get through that group now, which I'd be surprised if they did it.
Okay, so looking at the English teams in the Champions League, who do you think might not make it to the next round?
I don't think I'd be. I thought this from the start. I thought it'd be a miracle if Lampard gets them through the group stages of the Champions League. I think it's they would have been better in a group with one standout team who were by far better than all the others, and then the rest a bit rubbish and everyone's playing for second place, than this group they've got that seems very sort of equal. I think everyone will take points off each other, but I don't think Chelsea will take enough points off everyone else.
Thank you, producer Joel, for that lovely rendition of Spanish music. It's now A Song for Europe, which is essentially me just giving a monologue, but this time around I'm going to actually ask the panel because they've watched the games. So let's start with...
I haven't.
Okay, yeah, well, which games are you referring to?
Well, JJ watched a little bit of Real Madrid. Okay, Barcelona lost 2-0 to Granada. The question is, this must be the worst result for some time. How did it happen? And Granada were top of the league momentarily, at least on Saturday. It's all getting a little bit troubling for Barcelona at the moment. I don't know why sometimes people look at them and think, yeah, they're sure favourites to win the league, perhaps because Atletico were rebuilding and Real Madrid have been rather poor for some time. But the essence of it is that I'm not entirely sure Barcelona are very well run or very well balanced, and I don't think that they've made the right purchases over the summer. So this result condemns Barcelona to what is, I think, the worst start to La Liga for 25 years. They're now, I think, in eighth. Mm-hmm.
There's noises about, very exciting noises that Xavi might be getting lined up to come in. Wouldn't that be good?
He's been managing Qatar, yeah?
With his attitude, I'm not entirely sure.
In Qatar.
That's what I mean, sorry, in Qatar.
Yeah, I do. Everyone keeps saying that, oh, Madrid are in crisis, Zidane's going to go. I was like, oh, they're actually 4 points clear of Barcelona.
Yeah, this is exactly the brilliant point that you just made, Sam, because I always feel like with Madrid, they're always sort of disappointing in everyone's eyes. Zidane is a rubbish coach because Di Matteo also won the Champions League, isn't that true? People don't rate him, but when we look at Barcelona, and despite the fact that these guys keep bringing in players, you know, trying to go for Neymar, practically tried to sell off their entire squad to do that. Oh, we'll give you these three players in return for Neymar. Obviously created issues in the dressing room. There isn't any consistency. Valverde is one of the highest paid coaches. I think the second highest paid in Europe. He's on, what, 23 million. And his position looks terrible, especially when we see what happened in, as well, midweek in the Champions League for them against Dortmund. How Dortmund didn't win is beyond me. But there are serious problems there in Barcelona. And I think that this needs to be something that they need to address. They're winless away in the league, and now this stretches back to April. They're blunt in attack.
Why did they sign Griezmann? I think I've said this before on the podcast, but like, he just plays in the same position as Messi, which is like, you know, off the front man, left-footed, diminutive.
No, he plays as a striker through the middle. And he was available for the price he was at. And then Suarez is... I mean, I don't think he's the player he was, Suarez, now. And you've got
Suarez needs to go.
Yeah. Griezmann's not a Suarez replacement. He's more of a...
He plays as a nine, yeah. He's a great nine. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great position for him. I think Griezmann is a great player.
When he won the World Cup, he played off Giroud. He played off Costa.
No, he's multi-talented.
He's obviously very good.
But I think that he was, one of the best players in La Liga. I think it made perfect sense. It doesn't make sense if you're also going for Neymar, though, because then what you have is an overload going forward and then not enough balance in the rest of the team. But despite that, you know, everyone keeps talking about the crisis going on at Real Madrid. We know that they were defeated midweek. JJ, you thought they were rather poor against PSG.
Madrid were absolutely rotten against PSG. Thomas Tuchel's got PSG, it seems, sorted out with the midfield being nice and balanced and full of energy. Idrissa Gueye was really good as well, the kind of player they needed. And that's without Neymar and Mbappe and Cavani as well. Icardi was kind of anonymous, but I thought...
It's always anonymous.
I thought he was... I think PSG were good, but Real Madrid looked nothing like Real Madrid to me.
Well, if we talk about Barcelona being a little bit poor to the start of the season because they have had Messi injured, Real Madrid have really just had this transfer window where they finally made purchases over many years now. James Rodriguez and Thibaut Courtois have been their only purchases really since 2014 that of high value. This summer, they've made a few of them. But again, we're talking about a team that has a little bit of an aging midfield and has the same players. There hasn't been too many refreshing sort of legs coming in of great power other than Eden Hazard, who has been injured at the start of the season. They lost Cristiano Ronaldo, which is huge in trying to change that. And despite all of that, and how many people talk about crisis and Zidane underperforming, they are top of the league, level on points with Athletic Bilbao. They are a team that, when they want to, can still do it. They've managed to go to Sevilla in the Sánchez Pizjuán, which is a very hard stadium, and they haven't collected a win there for so long, and they managed it on this time round with Karim Benzema. They're still a team that is a little bit scary, but you have to understand that sometimes things take a while to recover, and it takes time to recover from losing Ronaldo. If they want... You know, I mean, I don't know what's going on with him in Juventus. But Juventus won, obviously, over the weekend. The other interesting news is obviously Lukaku. What do you guys make of his performances for Inter? He scored in the Milan
derby. He's going to score a lot of goals, isn't he? 20 goals?
This is interesting, actually, because, you know, he got into a fight with the team.
Yeah, but then they both scored, didn't they? Him and Brozovic.
They did. Now, this is what's really interesting is last year, Brozovic had a little bit of an issue with Icardi, and now it seems like he has a little bit of an issue with Lukaku. So apparently, or according to Gazzetta dello Sport, their midweek performance in the Champions League resulted in Lukaku at halftime saying that Inter needed to be more courageous going forward to put him in the right places. Brozovic took issue with that, and apparently they had a little bit of a tête-à-tête. But like you said, maybe this isn't a problem, or maybe this will be. I don't know how it will be going forward. But it's worth mentioning that Milan are a hideous side this season. And they do have a coach who is really famous for his plan A, but he can't play his plan A at the moment because the team isn't set up for him. And he's trying a plan B, a plan C. So it's a bad team. So Inter winning it, you reckon Inter will win the title, don't you?
I've thought that from the start, just because of Conte. He's one of the closest modern-day coaches at the moment who I just think is a guarantee.
So Conte will win over
you? You guarantee he's going to win a trophy.
Yeah.
If you look back what he did with Chelsea now, history, it is a miracle. It's an absolute miracle what he did with Chelsea.
And I see the Italian national team as well.
Like whatever you think of him and whatever you think of the fact that in 2-3 years it will all blow up and go mad, he's an absolute guarantee of silverware.
It's a miracle what he did at Juventus as well at the start. Yeah. I mean, what he built there was nothing short of astonishing. But what he did in Europe is exactly a very Antonio Conte thing with what Inter's performance
But would, you'll know far better than I would. Surely Inter fans would write off the Champions League to win Serie A this season.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think most of them would give their line. Napoli would do anything as well to win the league. So, but whether or not they can overcome... a Ronaldo, you know, Ronaldo's Juventus is the interesting point. But it is Sarri. He's still trying to get to grips with it. So we never know. But yeah, I agree with you. My money's also on Conte.
Didn't Ramsey score? Aaron Ramsey?
Ramsey did score. Yeah. Deflected shot.
Up and running.
It is Hellas Verona, so let's not keep running.
Monaco still haven't won, have they? Don't think they've won a game yet this season.
I'm pretty sure Monaco was...
Yeah, Jardim, genius.
He is a genius.
He's not a genius.
He is. He's absolutely a genius. Have you seen the
fraud.
Team?
Have you seen how many players they've bought for him?
Oh, my God.
Have you seen
None
how he's ruined
None of which
he's picked.
They're all Thierry Henry's picks.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. So you think he wanted Fabregas?
Fabregas is Thierry Henry's picks. Every single player from Fabregas onwards...
They bought him Pietro Pellegrini, a 16-year-old, and
nothing
was like, come
to do
on.
With Thierry Henry.
Monaco,
how many players did Monaco sign in the summer?
Hadim is nothing short of a genius. I'm telling you, he's a genius.
Fraud.
Okay. We can't have this conversation.
They haven't won a game this season.
Go away. Go away. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And don't worry, Tom returns to presenting duties next week. In the meantime, contact the podcast, afcpodcast@telegraph.co.uk. We'll read out the best of what you send us. Subscribe to the podcast, search for Telegraph Audio Football Club. Thanks to Joel Grove on the button, and thanks to you for your company. I'll talk to you again soon.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.